How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of 90 Min and Pledge Ball's podcast series, Football's Climate Conversation, in which we take a look at how climate change is affecting the beautiful game. In this episode, we'll be chatting exclusively to Nigeria captain Will Troostekong and Tokito CEO Jake Hardy about the eco-friendly boot brand and their work to combat climate change. Alex, welcome back to your episode number three.
Good to be back on the hat trick.
Nice. Have you been watching Gladiators, just lining up the quick sound bites?
I'm not. Is that a Gladiator sound bite? I need to watch more of it then. I could get some value out of it.
So we had a great time interviewing Will and Jake. It was a really enjoyable interview down at the studios in London for a treat rather than online kind of interview. Did you enjoy watching them back?
Yeah, really good. I mean, look, first of all, two brilliant guests that we've got on the pod, right? In terms of, you know, Will Troostekong, professional footballer, one of the very few talking about climate change and taking actions against it as well, which we'll learn more about as the pod unfolds. And then also Jake, founder of Tokito, the first really truly sustainable football boot as well, right? And we'll get to that. Uncover the relationship between Tokito and Will Troostekong as well. So brilliant guests, brilliant conversation. Looking forward to getting into it.
I think before we get into listening to the interview, you had a little challenge that you invented after this interview, didn't you?
I did, yeah, I did. Look, I think that football boots are quite a personal thing. And I think often you can tell a lot about the person based on the boots that they choose to wear, you know, like the color and the design. So I thought we'd start off with a little game where we have to guess the style of each other's boots. How does that sound?
It sounds intriguing, but I also am slightly nervous about what you come up with for me.
Look, I'm going to be really nice. So look, I'll go first. I've actually got you down as a bit of a traditionalist when it comes to football boots. So I think you go for something pretty plain and simple. Black boots, all completely black, like small, obviously. But you just keep it traditional, no fancy stuff, like a good solid tackle, 50-50, you're in there, both feet in with your black boots. I think that's my prediction for you. Am I close?
I don't know. I don't think this is what I'd expect from you. I think that you would have gone way more stereotypical me. I reckon I'd give you one more shot.
One more shot? Are they bright pink?
No, they're not bright pink. I almost don't know what my boots look like because I obviously have not got first-hand football boots. They're no. Really nice boots that basically this top player on my team gave me. They're a fairly recent addition. And when I started playing in them, I was like, wow, I have been playing in boots that were like a size too big from another football team member for like the last 3 years. And I didn't realise that impacted my performance quite so severely. They are black. They have red stripes. But it wasn't necessarily through choice. It was just that was what was secondhand. But they are delightful boots to play in. Right. So is this me choosing you now then? Your boots.
Yeah, come on. Over to you.
I reckon they are sparkling white, consistently sparkling white as though they're unused, with neon orange stripes down the side.
Do you know what? You're actually not too far off. So they're white. The brand shall not be named, but there are some lines involved with said brand, and those are actually golden. So Yeah, I'm one of those people.
And they're always super white.
Right, white boots, and people say, okay, we're going to kick this person really, really hard.
And what are you going to do when your boots are too old? What are you going to do with your boots?
Well, I mean, this is a really intriguing conversation that we'll get into, right? Because what can you do with boots when they get really, really old? There aren't really that many things that you can do with them, and they take a long time to biodegrade. They're very difficult to recycle as well, from all the different parts that they're made of as well. So I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I'm the sort of person that plays with football boots and trainers until holes start appearing. I mean, I had to get rid of my last football boots, which were also white but slightly better quality, which lasted me almost 10 years because the whole bottom sole was hanging off it. And at one point I almost tripped over the front of my football boot. And that's when I realized I probably needed to make a change. And that was after trying to super glue them back together about three different occasions. And I was like, I definitely need new boots at this point. It's got way too late.
Well, we are going to delve into that conversation in these interviews. So let's waste no more time and line up the first interview, which is with that Nigeria captain, man of the tournament, Will Troostekong.
Will, it is lovely to meet you. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're going to touch first upon AFCON. You had a standout tournament. Obviously, I'm sorry about the final.
Yeah.
How was AFCON for you?
That was an amazing experience. I've been lucky enough to be at three AFCONs, and this was by far the best one, I think, you would normally say that if you get to the final, but I mean, the organisation, the experience, the fans, I felt like I really enjoyed it. To get so far in the tournament is always special. Still very heartbroken about the final, but yeah, overall was an amazing experience and I really enjoyed it.
Was it different to previous years?
It was different. I felt like there was a bigger audience also away from Ivory Coast at the time. I felt like it was well covered around the world. I felt I had so many messages from people following the tournament. I think everyone who watched the tournament was really impressed, but even by the referees, the standard of the tournament. So there were so many positives from the tournament as a whole, I think, which was nice to be part of. And I think that's what really made it something special. And I think for Ivory Coast to win it in Ivory Coast wasn't too bad, even though I wish it was different, but I think it kind of rounded off a successful tournament.
Amazing. And I mean, for us in kind of sustainability and climate, obviously the things that we saw from over there were around particularly the boots, and there was so much noise around that. Can you just, for everybody listening, just give us a bit of background around the boots, your relationship with Sokoto and how that's come about?
Yeah, it was really special to debut the Scudetto boots at the tournament. It was something that we've been working on for a long time. So I joined Sokoto as a brand over 2 years ago.
Is that how you say it? Because I had this big debate on a previous podcast.
Yeah.
And, can you say it one more time?
Sokoto.
Okay, great.
I always wanted to be part of a footballing movement that would be good for the planet. And I think, for us to be able to create a football boot that is 100% recyclable is something special. And for me, the biggest thing as a player and also to be an investor ambassador, I wanted to be functional and to be like any boot that I've worn before. So I felt like a bit of a guinea pig, obviously having that at the tournament. But for the boot to perform so well and to get so much coverage and get everyone talking, that was the real idea behind us having the signature boot for the AFCON. It was a great success, and even for me to be here now to be able to explain the story to you, it's what we really did it for. And I think we are really proud of what we created and excited to see what we can do from here on, really.
Okay, I'm really interested in kind of exploring that a bit more, like the process of trying out a new boot, getting like kit manager approval. Was there a process to that with the Sokoto boot?
Yeah, I mean, there was a phase of testing. I wasn't part of that until later, so there's some on-field testing that has to be done for a boot just to make sure that it's safe and usable and performs the way you want it to. And then we kind of had to fast track it a little bit by the time I got the boot in Ivory Coast. So I trained on it and straight away it felt right. You know, you're always free to wear whatever boots you want to wear. So I think it's always a way that players like to express themselves. So yeah, that was the whole idea behind it. And yeah, it was a design that we made, I think a few months previous to the boot actually being created. We wanted it to be something that was part of, that would represent the Nigerian heritage, because it was going to be a boot specific for Nigeria at the AFCON, and also tell a story. I think yeah, the design has some patterns of leaves and different parts that like, we wanted to create, really, and for it to be green and white also was something special. So yeah, there was many things like that were all part of a process, and then the final bit was the training sessions before the first game, and when I had them on my feet straight away, I didn't want to take them off, and yeah, to then score in the second game.
Yeah, right.
Kind of, yeah, after that they were my lucky boots, so I didn't want to take them off for the rest of the tournament, yeah.
Have you taken them off now?
I've just about taken them off now, yeah.
And so did your teammates ask you about your boots?
Yeah, so that was something that was really cool. So as soon as I got them on, everyone wanted to know, oh, what are they, where are they from, can I get a pair? Yeah, I had a lot of questions throughout the tournament, also from other players from different teams. And I think throughout the tournament, we had about five or six different players that tried them and wore them and were all very enthusiastic about it. And now we have four more investors in Sokito as well, and are going to be brand ambassadors. So that is the whole idea behind it. I think there's over 40 players now that are involved with Sokito. And yeah, we're trying to use this platform really through different players who believe in the same idea and message and what the boot stands for, to hopefully wear them and yeah, get people talking about it.
Amazing. And so those players who talked to you about it, did they ask you around the sustainability of them? What, you know, what was their kind of awareness already of the need to address climate and sustainability?
There wasn't a lot of awareness. So the first question tends to be about the colours and what the boots are like to play in. So and then once they, you know, you address that and they can see the performance, try it, then they want to know the story behind the boot. So then that is where I tried to explain to them how it's been created. Jake was actually there with us in the tournament. Jake is the founder. And he also had a good chance to really brief them on what was in the boots, what the idea was behind it, and yeah, get the players thinking. I think everyone who heard the message loved it. And for a lot of them was the first step really to think about sustainability in football and what they could actually do as a change. And that normally opened a conversation. So there hasn't any players that I've come across from my team in Nigeria weren't necessarily aware. But there's been other players who have reached out through social media who are on a similar journey or a bit further, who love the boot for what it stands for. And then, of course, when they see it, they like the look of it as well. So it's quite diverse in how the conversation goes. But it always ends with trying to tell the story and what they can actually do and how it can impact the planet in a good way. So
that's amazing. I mean, that's, you know, I really love the fact that it's not only about minimising the impact of the boot, but then sparking that conversation and increasing awareness. And when you spoke to the players about this, I mean, do they as players, and did you notice over there, the impacts of climate on their sport currently?
Yeah, I mean, we were playing in Ivory Coast. It was 38 degrees. We know how hard it was to play in those conditions. So the climate is a talking point throughout the tournament. And then, you know, that straight away links to, okay, what are we doing now? How is it going to be in the future for the next AFCONs, if we're still players, or maybe for the next generation and everything that's to come after? So that is the conversation that you have. And yeah, then they also become more aware. So we had some things we've tried to do with the water bottle, so we weren't using as many, and different things that we can impact there and then. But it's, yeah, more just about thinking further ahead, really, in the bigger picture, and trying to use all the players that believe in the same message and hopefully stand for it, to spread that to their following and fans and social media entourage that all comes with it. And of course, all the football fans that were locked into AFCON to watch the tournament.
Nice. And so, going back a bit then, you mentioned, you know, when you started your journey, essentially, and you've had other players reaching out who are maybe further on that journey. What was it that started that journey for you?
I think actually when I got introduced to Jake and the brand. So I, of course, you know, somewhat about climate change and how it's affecting our everyday life. Then you think about, you know, I'm 30 years old now, so what's changed in my lifetime? What have I seen? Then also being in Nigeria for quite a lot of my youth, and also being there frequently, seeing the pollution that you have there, the air pollution, water pollution, how that actually impacts people there. Sometimes it is a lot more obvious and confronting than being here, where you might not necessarily feel the direct impact. So it was something that I was already thinking about. And this was just a tool really that I could use and to explore that more. So I learned a lot on the journey, you know, got me thinking about all the traveling that I'm doing as a football player, and also what can I do to make changes in my personal life, but also share the message really. So that has been my journey for the last 2 years. I've got three young kids, which, hopefully they want to play football, not in whatever capacity, or they want to do sports or do anything really. And I'd like to think that they will be able to have the same possibilities, especially the things that you see now with the floods and the general conditions for people to even be outside or to have a chance to exercise. You know, what is it going to look like in 10 years or 20 years when they're going to be my age? And also for their children and everyone after that, will they have the same opportunities? And that gets you thinking, really. So that's been my journey so far. So maybe it started for a selfish reason when I think about my kids, but then you kind of think about, okay, everyone really, and that quickly unfolded for me really.
That's a really nice way of putting it, I think, because climate has this weird knee-jerk response for a lot of people where they immediately think of certain words associated with it and a lot of people turn off to it.
Yeah.
But relating it to football, I mean, I saw a stat yesterday whereby 30% of young people have had to reduce the amount of sport they do because of climate impacts. So, you know, you look at Canada, yeah. A lot of kids were not allowed out for a good number of weeks because the air quality was so poor because of the wildfires. And as you said, the trouble is that for us, A, we forget very quickly. So those very hot days, we forget really quickly. But B, we feel like it's happening somewhere else and we're not that connected to it. So it's a really nice way of putting it. Have you found it difficult as an athlete speaking out about it?
No, I haven't actually met much resistance about it. I think I always find it easier to show people what I'm doing different, and then normally you get some questions and then you can have an actual conversation about it. I sometimes find when I try to make a statement in everything I do, or try to be, not try to be too outspoken, but force it down people's throat, then sometimes it doesn't really have the effect of people taking it in and actually wanting to make some changes. So it's very relatable, and like you just touched on now as well, but the wildfires being in Greece, close to where I live in Thessaloniki, also we had something similar in the summer, to a point where I was standing at home and I could see the smoke, and there was talks about us not being able to travel because we couldn't fly because there was too much smoke in the air. So it's things that are really impacting us every day, even in our sports life or in our life in general now. So sometimes you can have that conversation because of events that happen there and then. But then otherwise, I try to find ways through podcasts or maybe stuff that I share on social media just to put it out there. And then, I leave it open to people to come back to me to talk about it. And if anyone is interested, then I'm more than happy to help them to as far as I know, or put them in touch with people that I've learned from, and then they can find out more information.
Before I move on, going back to kind of when you realised through talking to Jake about the impact of climate. I mean, a lot of people turn off to climate because it's so overwhelming when they realise where we're at. They don't know what to do. They think that as an individual, they can't have an impact. What was your kind of response when you first realised?
I think that is the general feeling, because you feel quite helpless and insignificant in something so big. But I think for me, what pushed me on from there was that I knew that I had a platform being a football player and have a chance to speak and to speak to other people, and people would listen just because you play a sport, which sometimes seems quite ridiculous. But you have to then try and use that. So for me, that was a driving force really. But in general, it can be quite overwhelming and also hard to think, where can I start? But then there's great initiatives, I think, sometimes, what I saw for the Green Football Weekend and trying to make it almost competitive in football and among fans, because as you know, in my world, which is very football orientated, of course, yeah, the fans are really the people that can make a change, because that's where the numbers lie. So when you try to introduce something like that to, yeah, tap into what the mentality is for people, where they like having a community but also like to have something competitive, and make that for something good, then I think that's like the perfect combination to actually make change. So yeah, it was, but that was my feeling really, to try and use my voice. But yeah, sometimes also I don't know where to start, or I find it difficult to say, okay, these are the things I'm changing, but I'm not necessarily going to see direct impact of the changes that I'm making.
That's a really great point. You make a few really good points there, actually. So first of all, you'll be glad to know the research actually backs up the thing about the fan community. Yeah. You know, football has a platform like no other and is a community like no other in its potential to drive change. And you think what fans have already mobilised around, like the European Super League, the potential of us coming together and mobilising around this is so game-changing. It's, you know, the impact is massive. As you said, you can't see your direct impact, but you speaking out also has a ripple effect that is absolutely huge. Okay, so I want to also talk about a bit along your journey. You also, when you moved from Watford to Salernitana, yeah. You also offset your transfer there. So can you give a bit more detail about what you did there?
Yeah, so I heard about this through a player called Ben Mee, who moved from Burnley to Brentford. So he did something similar, and he did it in the UK. So yeah, we loved the idea, and we thought it was applicable to try and implement that, or maybe try and make that a rule among all transfers. But again, I think the first and foremost easiest way to get a conversation like that going is by actually doing it, and then afterwards explaining why you did it. And then hopefully people understand it and see the reason in it. So that was the idea behind it. So again, Jake and the team, they helped me calculate how much we actually, you know, what kind of carbon footprint we had for the transfer. The people that were involved, because it's not just me. I had my brother who came with me, who was part of my management team, an agent who was already in Italy. Of course, the back and forth that you have for something to happen like that, when I arrived in Italy to go and do my medical, to come back to the club. So there's many parts of an operation like that to calculate it and then try to offset and see, okay, what can we actually do that is going to be balancing that equation. So the first thing was trying to see what is the easiest way to calculate something. That there's many different formats online already out there for people to...
So is it primarily around the travel?
Primarily around the travel, yeah, to calculate that. So we tried to see if we can find the streamlined version and made sure that we covered everything. And then with that number, see what we could actually do. And we thought about obviously trying to make an impact in Italy. It wouldn't make sense to try and do it somewhere else or to have to travel to do something else again. That's how we ended up with the olive trees at Alba Rami and the initiative that they already had. And that became a really good partnership. And being a great way to do that transfer. And we use the same format now for me moving to PAOK in Greece.
Nice. So as you know, because I prepped you, I wanted to discuss offsetting, because obviously you've said what you could do. Now, to start with, and the reason I raise this is because offsetting is becoming the go-to for a lot of organisations rather than reducing emissions first. I mean, can we discuss a little bit around why we wouldn't recommend or the ambiguities around offsetting, why it is something that has to come as a second to reduction first?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've touched on it, explained it really, because there's certain things sometimes you can't avoid. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I still have a job to do. I have a family that I need to look after. So making a transfer and doing certain things in your career is all part of football. And in my opinion, people need to do those things in order to progress in life. So to offset something like that, in my opinion, again, seemed like the right way of doing it. But then on the other hand, to try and avoid that carbon footprint is the ultimate goal, really. So there's different things that I do in my day-to-day life. But yeah, offsetting obviously isn't the answer for us to just carry on in the way that we're going now.
Also, to say that, you actually went to go, as you mentioned, to go and visit those olive trees to check them out, because, you know, offsetting is an issue, as we know, because those trees potentially can't make it to being large enough to absorb any significant amount of carbon. They can completely, they can be decimated by disease or by wildfires. And often they're planted in areas where it's not natural for those trees. But you actually went and you went and saw those olive trees and saw the plantation where they are. And how many olive trees are there?
Oh, in the thousands. So, okay. It was a real experience. And I found it really interesting to actually go there to hear their story and also the initiative they created there for the farmers to do more, really. So it was a win-win for them because they'll get extra funding by doing that. And of course, it's a win for everybody because, they'll be absorbing more carbon. So, it was a really cool day and I learned so much and also just understood what they were doing there. It was a farm that's been operating for God knows how many years already. And they took me all around. So I knew that I was in safe hands there. And again, was a moment for me to learn a lot.
And then you're also working with Common Goal. Can you talk to me a bit about what that work involves, the Common Goal?
Yeah, so Common Goal, I was introduced by another football player. The first football player really was Juan Mata, who was part of the, I think he was the first or founder of Common Goal. I love the initiative. I think we are very fortunate as a football player in a short period of time to obviously earn a quite significant amount of money. And to be able to, again, do something with that charitable, to give back. And Common Goal is, for me, is a great partner to do that with because they help you to choose something that is something that you're passionate about. Maybe it's difficult to find the right charity or trying to find the right initiative to do something. And I think, 1%, which I think is the minimum that the Common Goal members tend to donate, up to however much you want to, is something that all of us can miss out. And it's great to see that there's so many different football players. And again, the whole idea of creating a community and power in numbers, that you can actually make significant changes. And so I started off by partnering with a charity in Nigeria because I wanted to do something back at home. But there's many different options and they just hold your hand through the process. I learned a lot and very proud to be part of the Common Goal team.
Well, I've got to say, it's incredibly inspiring talking to you because I think there's some messages that will resonate with everyone. And, you know, I really appreciate discussing with you, for example, the offsetting. I think that will really resonate with people because you're quite right. We do not need to all be perfect, but we all need to be doing what we can. And there are structures that exist that currently we cannot change. But speaking out about them like you are really helps to accelerate that systemic change. So I really appreciate everything that you're doing, but also B, that you've given the time to come and talk about it and share it with people. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
So what a great conversation that was. I mean, like I said, that was a really, really enjoyable meet and I think really refreshing from my side just to be able to delve into the various points there and have him speak so authentically and knowledgeably about all of it. Before I kind of go on a bit further about that, Alex, what were your thoughts around that interview and your kind of key takeaways?
Well, I think before we get into the interview, I just want to hit you with a few stats around football boots in general, because we know shoes and football boots, they're just an everyday part of life, right? So value of the footwear industry in US dollars is expected to be $568.54 billion by 2031. Every year, more than 20 billion shoes are manufactured. And this one's a really interesting one in terms of emissions. The footwear industry is responsible for 1.4% of all greenhouse gas emissions in the world. So just to put that into context, globally, flights are 1.9%. So footwear emissions are almost as big as aviation emissions. And then the final one is every year, people in the US throw away over 300 million pairs of shoes. 95% which end up in landfill. So some pretty hard hitting stats.
That is massive, isn't it? I mean, the other crazy thing is I was listening to a podcast yesterday and they were talking about landfill and they were talking about how, you know, when we first invented landfill, the whole idea was that you buried the waste and it rotted. And, you know, over that time it rotted. But now that isn't really happening. And in fact, you know, where I think there's a place, I think it's called Tilbury, where some of that landfill is actually starting to erode away. And so you can see items in there that have been there for years and years and years. And it's items that, you know, these interviewees could recognise in their childhood. So, you know, they were saying that even paper, there was even paper there that was from like 30, 40 years ago. So these things that we assumed would biodegrade and not be there anymore are there and now coming to the surface. Now you think about football boots and how much of that material can actually biodegrade. That kind of stuff is going to be there for years.
So I think,
you know, we assume it's going to rot away and that's what the landfill sites are, but actually it's just being buried in a cave that then gets eroded and it will come out.
Completely agree. I mean, it's really, really scary. So in researching in advance of this pod, I was reading that it takes on average between 20 to 40 years for shoes to biodegrade. And then in some specialist products like running trainers, for example, shock absorbers can take 1,000 years to biodegrade, which is absolutely insane. But
I think the other frightening thing there, though, is what are these materials made of? You know, we're hearing about forever chemicals now that, you know, have built up within our water systems, PFAs, aren't they? A lot used in waterproofing that don't biodegrade. They build up in the same way that mercury builds up in fish. It doesn't break down. So as they eat things, they get more and more of it in there. That then enters the food chain as well. So not only does it, you know, affect wildlife, but it also then affects us as well.
Agree, yeah. And I think the overall takeaway for me on this and in this topic in general is just about raising levels of curiosity, because essentially we need to better understand what our products are made of and how the materials are sourced as well. And as part of that, what do we do with them when we finish with them end of life, which is why you asked me that question about what am I going to do with my football boots when they're end of life. It's quite a difficult question to answer, because it's not like the big brands at the moment are helping us understand fully what we can do with our products when they're end of life as well. And I think that's a big part of what Jake and Sakito stand for. But back to your original question around Will, I thought it was a really interesting podcast interview. He covered like a number of different products, but a few takeaways for me were: when it comes to sustainability, I think it's still seen as an added benefit. So I think one of the comments he made was when he was sharing it with some of his the boots with some of his teammates, they were still interested about how comfortable it was to play in, and you know, what were the designs looking like as well. And then the sustainability factor was an added benefit, and I think it's a strong added benefit, but it's still like it's not a decision-making factor. Like if the boots don't look good, or if they're not too comfortable, and kind of focus more on them, the not looking good side of things, then people still might not be using the products just because of the aesthetics, which I thought was an interesting takeaway. And the other thing was just how impacted Will has been by climate change, particularly now he's playing over in Greece. So the wildfires that were taking place there impacting like air quality, and also just the ability for his team to fly from one place to another. Was really interesting to hear that, the insight of a professional footballer. And then finally, just using his platform and appearances on social media to raise awareness as well around climate change and this sustainable football boots from Sakito that he's wearing and wore at the AFCON.
Yeah, completely. I must say that was one of the things that I really loved about it. And I think Jake reinforced that, as we'll hear in a minute, was the fact that not only were they producing this boot in a way that was as sustainable as possible, but their other thing was that this was the talking point. This was the entry point, just as it was with Will. And that was another thing that I loved, was that when I asked him about his journey into sustainability, it had actually started with that boot, with Jake approaching him, which I love. And now he speaks so passionately about.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors,
Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
And is so knowledgeable about it. So you're exactly right. I think it's great that that is the entryway in. The other thing, touching upon what you said about the wildfires in Greece, is really interesting, because when he talked about AFCON and I asked him about the heat over there, and he said the climate was a constant talking point. But when he spoke to his teammates about the boots, like you said, they weren't already interested in sustainability. They didn't kind of make that connection between that heat and climate, which is really, really interesting. So slightly frightening, I think, as well, that basically, and I think we see this in the wider research, we have things like extreme weather events, you know, wildfires, storms, huge amounts of flooding, which obviously we've seen in the UK recently. But and whilst that piques interest, people very, very quickly forget about it. And they certainly don't like to make that connection between that and climate change. But at least from that conversation at AFCON about those boots, it should hopefully start more and more people talking about it. And as I think Jake says in the later interview, they're looking at bringing on, I think, about 50 more ambassadors as a result of it.
Yeah, and I think that's anything that can just raise the conversation and raise awareness is only a good thing, right? The other important point, which I think Will touched upon, was just around how he offset his transfer as well. Which again was an interesting one, because I think I'm probably not the only person when that came out in the media. I probably was quite critical or skeptical of that, thinking offsetting's not the answer. Like, is this a footballer that doesn't truly understand how to be sustainable and thinks that they can go around just offsetting their impact and continuing their behaviour? And I think one of the big things that came out of that interview was that Will actually truly understands that, you know, we do have to consume less, we do have to reduce in order to be more sustainable. But in areas where we don't have a solution, the next best thing that we can do is to offset. And I actually really enjoyed how he'd gone to check on some of his offsetting investments as well, right?
Yeah, completely. And you're right. I mean, this was one I really wanted to pick up with him, because it is becoming a dangerous thing whereby offsets is seen as the automatic answer. Now, we have to attract money to regeneration projects, but the issue with it is that at the moment people are shouting about the offsetting they're doing, and there could be way more they're doing first. And as he said, he basically looked at everything else he could do first to reduce his emissions, and that was what was left, and that was what he couldn't currently avoid. I think the thing to note on what you've said, though, is that it's something that he can't change, but potentially going forward, as he is now, he could speak out about it, and then that structure can be looked at, and those structures that we're currently locked in, we do all have agency to make an impact and change, and actually have way more power there than we really think. No, it was a great conversation, and yeah, I just really admire him for everything he's doing. I found him quite inspirational.
Yeah, 100%. The final thing I would say on Will is that I'm looking forward to a story of full circularity where we get the official William Troostekong olive oil range from all these olive trees as part of his offense too. So if you're listening, Will, you can give me the commission on that idea later.
Amazing. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so next then, we had the founder of Sakito, who is that person who is responsible for getting Will on this sustainability journey and having the impact that he's already had, and I have no doubt will have further impacts in the future. So let's tune in to listen to that interview with Jake Hardy.
Hello, Jake. It is lovely to have you join us on the podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's been a long time that we've wanted to get you on here. So obviously, Will has given us this amazing introduction and completely you know, sold the Sokito boots to the world.
Good pronunciation.
Thank you. I really concentrate on that. I'd love to hear a little bit of the backstory around the boots, why they started, where you started, and how those boots are really game-changing in their field.
Yeah, so I was kind of involved in the football boot space, kind of loosely. I had a bit of a reselling site where we used to buy and sell old boots. And I was actually on holiday in Vietnam, and there was all of these sort of overnight tailor shops by the side of the road. And I tried to get a pair of boots made, and they couldn't do it. And I spent about a year of my life talking to this sort of factory, trying to get a pair of boots made. I went back over there and found out they were buying Nike and Adidas's scrap material and some of the other big brands. And then they were turning it into an amazing product. And it kind of was a bit of a light bulb moment, to be honest with you. It got me thinking about the waste of the industry and what would happen to that material if it wasn't turned into product. And was doing a bit of research, kind of found out that 12.5 million pairs of boots go to landfill every year in the EU and the US. So it's huge, huge numbers. And kind of wanted to do something about it. So I spent three and a half years developing the first shoe, the Davista. And it was super innovative, still the most eco-friendly boot ever made until our new one comes out. But it's made mainly from recycled materials. So recycled carpet, plastic bottles, tires. There's also some bio-based material in there. And we've now then developed that in terms of product side. And we've got a new boot which is made almost entirely from bio-based materials and bio-based plastics, which is really the next step on. And really what we want to do as a brand is create football product that performs at the exact same level but has less of an impact on the planet.
Or better, according to Will.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm waiting for my pair so I can really absolutely nail the women's casual leather.
Yeah, that's it. What size are you? They look quite small.
They are small. Yeah, three, please. Thanks.
Whoa, we've only got four. Insoles.
Well... stuff my toe. So with the bio one then,
yeah,
is that the kind of thing where you stick it in your home compost and just let it rot?
That's not actually, so it's not biodegradable, but it's bio-based. Okay. So the materials at the front end are made from plants, so sugarcane, bamboo, corn, a whole host of other materials. There's some recycled plastics in there also. Really, we try to look at what needs to go into the boot to make it perform as well as it needs to. And then what has the lowest impact on the planet? And that's through LCAs, that's through carbon analysis of all of the materials, supplier, how it travels. And then we make a decision based on that in terms of what makes it actually into the end product. So it's a long process. Like, our development takes longer than most brands, I think, because we're using brand new materials. But there's so many people now doing really great work in the material innovation space. Now, I think we'll touch on the recycling of the old boots a little bit later, but how that's progressing. The more people that are aware of it, the more demand essentially for that, the faster we'll get there. And I think we've done quite a good job of creating product which performs as well as anything else on the market for the same price. And then the sustainability is just an added benefit. Mm. So you've just obviously spoken to Will, and he said, sort of after trying the boot and talking about us, then it was eyes were open and you could learn and understand it a bit more. That's kind of where I see our place in football and in the market is, try the boot, oh, it's better for the planet. What else is there? And it's that opening of the door. So we're very front end, I think.
Yeah, agree. And, you know, as we talked about with Will, I love that it sparks conversation around it as well.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a very technical process. So in terms of testing the performance of the boot, how do you go about doing that then?
Field testing and lab testing. So there's big sort of football boot specific requirements that you have to go through in terms of lab tests to get it to a level which can perform on pitch. And then it's on pitch testing. That's mainly for durability, if there's pressure points, all that sort of thing. So
you have a load of people who test out the boots for you, yeah, and feedback. Okay.
Yeah, we have testers, and luckily there's a lot of them that are pros. And then we also have grassroots. I'm usually first. So anything that goes terribly wrong usually happens to my feet.
Did you score goals as soon as you tried on these?
Yeah, I won AFCON as well.
Yeah.
No, but it's important, I think, to go through that initial phase before they hit on pitch, because, you know, if something goes wrong there, then it's kind of game over. So we're very, very diligent, and we don't put anything out unless it's absolutely top level.
And so where do you source the materials from, you know, for both types of boot, the Davista and the...
Scudetta. Anyone? there's a variety. So we launched with the Davista being produced in Italy and Bulgaria. There was two European hubs.
We're now producing the Scudetta in China. The reason for that is actually the LCA, the carbon footprint of the shoe, is lower because all of the material factories are around the shoe factory. So there's less traveling. But it depends. There's a lot of partners we have for different types of material. So it's all over the place, basically.
And how deep do you have to go with the kind of manufacturers, the providers, in terms of checking footprint? So, for example, the energy sources they use to power the factories, etc.
Incredibly deep. And it's an incredibly tedious process. But I think we've seen with a lot of things in the industry that people will pull the wool over your eyes unless you go to those extra lengths. So we go to every factory, we go to every component factory. So if we're buying a material from a factory, we go to every component that was inside of that and see all the way through the chain. They all have to be audited and they have to meet the requirements, otherwise they don't make the cut, basically.
Amazing. So very, very soon, I don't think it's been announced yet, but the European Waste Directive is coming out. Can you give us a bit of a top line on that and what your thoughts are around this directive?
I mean, basically what it is that brands are going to be held responsible for collecting and recycling their waste. And that's going to extend to clothing, footwear, and it's great. I think any time that brands and industry has to take responsibility for what they're producing, the better. And they just announced actually in France yesterday, it just passed one level of how it needs to get to become a law. There's one more level it has to go through. But it's basically a fast fashion tax. So on super, super cheap items, they're now getting charged, or they're going to implement a charge of between 5 and 10 euros on top of that. And then that's going to go to subsidize local companies that are making sustainable products.
Amazing.
So it's a great way of subsidizing those instead of subsidizing the guys which produce the waste, and also holding them accountable.
And incentivizing, making it more responsible as well.
Exactly.
I mean, I always think that if you actually put your own waste in your garden, then it would probably start to shift how you thought about buying. And
yeah, I think it's in clothing, I think it's 12 kilograms of waste per person per year in Europe, which is huge.
Yeah, that is huge.
It's huge. So yeah, being held responsible, not over consuming, which is one thing that as a brand is a strange thing to be peddling, but you know, the most sustainable boots are the ones that you own. So until you need a new pair, then Saucito are the most sustainable. But otherwise, wear what you've got.
Right. Yeah, that is huge, isn't it? That's like six toddlers worth of clothing per person. Amazing. So can you talk to us a little bit about the recycling scheme you guys have got going as well?
Sure, so we're the only company in the world that can recycle old boots. So we have an amazing partner in Italy that basically take the boots, they're shredded and sorted via magnets, air separation, vibration, and so you get the really high quality raw materials out of the other end. We've done one batch. Basically how it works is you have to have critical mass to put them through the machine, so you have to have a couple of thousand pairs. So we've done one batch. A lot of the sort of hard parts of the outsole shredded up and turned into like flooring, so like playground flooring, athletics tracks, that kind of thing.
So you could actually have a floor made out of Will's old boots?
Yeah, exactly, and we're working on something in the future which is going to be like QR code linked to it. So if Will recycled a pair of boots, he would be linked to a QR code, and then when you bought a pair, you could scan it and it could be like, oh, there's 0.5 pairs of Will's boots in here,
yeah,
and there's this other person's, and then
I
also on the flooring. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So we're still sort of testing some of the softer materials, what we can do with them. What we want to do is create a fully circular boot. So if we can have some sort of subscription model long term where you just send them back, and then once they get to end of life, then we recycle them and spin some of the old materials into the lacing or the stitching thread, for example. But it's a work in progress.
And the boots, they're unisex, aren't they? Because Katie Rude wears a pair as well, doesn't she?
Katie Rude, Tessel Medag, I don't know if she's been on the pod. David Wheeler, so we've got a nice little community of players now wearing the boot and really advocating for the brand, which is great.
Nice. And so how does that player relationship work? How is it different to other player relationships, particularly the, you know, the Will Saucito one?
At the end of the day, we don't pay any players. So all of the players that we work with are investors and own part of the company. And it really gives a sort of different light, I think, to a partnership where, you know, most boot brands, boot deals are paid deals to wear the boots on pitch, potentially some media coverage or whatnot. But when players have ownership of the brand, they want it to grow. So using their platform to talk about it, to spread the word, being available for 90 Min podcasts and other media duties. Like, it's all part of really growing the brand and how much visibility it gets.
And there's the authenticity there as well then.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And it's growing. We've got, when Will joined, we had about 20 players. We're now, at the end of this March, there's going to be a new group of players that are joining. There's going to be between 40 and 50, we're still working on that, that are going to own part of the company, basically, and be wearing the boots and really, really pushing it. So, yeah, it's quite a unique take, I think.
Definitely. So there are certain things about football generally that needs to grow in terms of addressing sustainability. Now, obviously, at the moment, there's very little regulation around sustainability, although that might change. You know, the independent regulator was announced the bill yesterday. Potentially, environmental sustainability may well come under the regulator's remit. But as it is at the moment, it's commercial partnerships that really drive that. What role do you think that brands should have in driving sustainability in sport?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. I think football is always about growth, right? And I think at the moment, you're right, maybe legislation will come into place which sort of makes them factor in sustainability into things instead of just growing the size of tournaments and how many teams are playing all over the world and games here, there and everywhere. And that needs to definitely change. But yeah, brands have a huge responsibility, right? I think everyone does, actually. So everyone who's involved in the sport, who's taking a paycheck from it, it doesn't have to be in sort of detriment to that. They can do that, they can earn, but they can also do some things which are helping to sort of spread awareness, I suppose, a little bit and doing, you know, what they can. You know, some of the other brands, Nike have done a shoe with recycled materials, so have Adidas, and it's great. But it's just doing it more and more and more until it becomes the norm.
Absolutely. The norm to essentially preserve what it is that matters to us, because our metrics so far have been so far off. Just touching upon what you've said there about some of the brands doing it, I think the issue we do sometimes see, though, are that people don't know the questions to ask. So we see a lot of greenwashing, I would say, within sport at the moment, because it is becoming more commercially viable to stand up and talk about sustainability. What types of questions would you suggest asking a brand who, say, has brought out something that is supposedly an eco shoe or an eco item of clothing?
Reading the description usually gives it away, I think. A lot of the time, if there's no specifics, then that's a bit of a red flag for me. Like, if you're putting a recycled material into something, you should know what percentage is recycled. You should also know where it's come from or the source of the material. When it's 100% recycled plastic or 20% by weight recycled materials, for me, there's no transparency there. So it's just, yeah, reading a little bit about it, and it's fairly obvious, I think.
Is there a threshold of recycled material that means that you can call something recycled?
I don't know, actually. I don't know. I know that a lot of it's 20%.
Okay.
I think with bio-based, it's about 20%, I think. So it's pretty small. But you can pretty much make any material, and you just take the virgin material and you throw in 20% of something that's recycled, and it will still work in the exact same way.
Okay.
And we know that there's brands that have a recycled shoe which has a percentage of recycled material in it. And we know from their development that they can put more in there, but bottom line means that they don't, because it can be marketed as a recycled product.
That's really interesting. And going back to what you said a minute ago about the structure of football, so what would you say, looking at football generally, is the most, I would say, damaging thing when it comes to sustainability and essentially protecting where we play?
I think it's just the amount of games. Like, in terms of like high-level professional football.
Who do you support?
I support Liverpool.
Okay.
But, you know, there's just more and more games. Every tournament's growing. It's having more teams. It's being played all across the world. There's so many international breaks, international tournaments. And, like, players suffer at the end of the day. But then so does the planet. That's not even a consideration, the extra flying and the extra emissions from all of the fans, all of the players flying themselves.
Well, and the fans actually don't want that much football either. You know,
no.
Football Supporters Europe, in fact, made a big fuss about expansion of tournaments.
Did they?
Yeah, and not from an environmental sustainability standpoint either.
Yeah, well, it's just they lose almost their purpose, some of them. And it's like there's so many games. You want them to feel special, like international tournaments in particular. And when you're just adding and adding and adding, they kind of lose a little bit, or they can lose a little bit of that. And then the other thing is obviously just travel and the amount of fans that go and watch football worldwide. I don't know what that figure is, but it's huge, isn't it? Like weekly basis. And so just so putting certain things into place to help that. I know the Euros, they have a 36-hour train pass, right? Yep, where you can use public transport as part of the tickets. And just building things around places that are easier to get to. A lot of the time you've got like finals being always at Wembley, which is great. But when you've got two teams from the
north of
England
playing. Which I think actually UEFA have done for the Euros. I think they have actually positioned the training camps.
Makes sense.
Considering where they're going to be playing so that you do reduce that travel,
which is great.
Yeah, definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, I've got a difficult question to finish with.
Can't wait.
If you're in front of the yet to be appointed independent regulator, what would you ask them to include in their licensing criteria for clubs?
In terms of working with brands?
Can be anything. So in terms of the most impactful thing when it comes to football and environmental sustainability, what would you want to see in the regulation that clubs have to meet to get their license, basically?
For me, it's fan travel. Like, so much could be saved by coaches put on for all of their fans for away days, serving certain types of food, having vegan options at each place. Like, food, energy and travel, right, are the big three, and putting something into place that they can start with now and then will build over time, I think should be a given, but hitting those three pillars, food, energy and travel.
There you go. Independent regulator, when you'd be appointed, there you go. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. I look forward to receiving my boots. I shall feed back in those. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. It's been lovely to be here.
So another really fascinating interview there, wasn't it? I mean, you know, going back again to that question that I had for you at the beginning about what you're going to do with your boots, I think what was really interesting there was clearly the degree of knowledge that Jake had around this and the story of where Sokito came about from. I love, because, you know, he's basically started by going to Vietnam, trying to get some boots made, and then just thinking about how things could change. And now look at the business that he has.
Yeah, I mean, fascinating. Look, first of all, I love a good story. And then secondly, I love sustainability. So a sustainable story is an absolute winner. And as the kids that I coach at grassroots level would say to me, they would say, there are levels to this game, sir or coach. And Sokito are really like setting the bar pretty high and showing that what levels there are to the game. So I think there's some really interesting points that Jake made just around the rigor in assessing Sokito's supply chain and the suppliers that they work with. Also kind of dispelling like some of the, or calling out some of the, one might say, greenwashing or ambiguity around recycled content within football boots as well, that some of the big brands and big players in this space are putting out there at the moment, when they're maybe not telling as fuller story as they could be telling, which I think was also fascinating. And it's, of course, it's very easy or easier for a startup to tell a fully sustainable story because it's been designed as sustainable from the ground up. But nevertheless, I still think Jake made some really, really interesting points. And if there are two things that I think I hope happen, is that one, we see more Sokito boots out there, because it stands for something, you know, very good. And the second thing is it puts pressure on the big players at the moment, who are genuinely driving the biggest negative impact when it comes to products that aren't sustainably or ethically sourced and can't be recycled. But what did you make of it, Katie?
Well, no, I totally agree with you. I think the one thing I'd say there is that, yes, it is easier to a degree that he's setting up these supply chains right from the start, but also he's started a business from nothing. You know, these huge players at the moment have far more resources at their disposal. And whilst they're going to have to look at their own manufacturing processes that currently exist, there's so many resources they could pull in there. They're in a huge position to genuinely drive change properly. And, you know, the other thing I loved was that obviously he had really gone to the depths of that supply chain and asked the questions. And like you said, you know, it is really about looking beyond those initial kind of percentages or recycled, made of recycled material, to asking actually how much is this made of recycled material? How much is actually newly generated? Where did that come from? It was so interesting and again, really inspiring. And, you know, to have got such buy-in already, I think, from so many players around this is fantastic. I think the boot recycling thing is also really interesting. You know, obviously that needs to be scaled up, but I'd love to go and look in some of those factories to see how these bits are taken apart and how they're then recycled. And I love the idea that people are going to be walking on flooring made from professional footballers' boots. That's really cool.
Yeah, agreed. Sounds like we're going to take the podcast on the road at this point. So I'm not complaining. As long as we're going by EV or a sustainable method of transport, then it's all good with me. No, the other thing that I thought was really interesting, and just generally around Jake's like authenticity around his message was that, I quote him here, he said, "The most sustainable boots are the ones that you currently own." And there's never a truer word that's been said, right? So around just let's pushing away from consumerism and only really buying when you need like replacement boots, right? And I think that was a really interesting and refreshing message that he put out there, which was when your boots do essentially come to an end of life and you need some new ones, they've got holes like my ones get to, then he wants Akito to be, you know, top of mind when it comes to purchasing the next set of next pair of football boots. So I thought that was a really refreshing thing to hear from a founder of an organization, a product-based organization, because as you know, Katie, like so many other manufacturers are saying, actually you can buy these boots in this color, and then if you want to play in the summer, maybe you can buy them in this color, and we've got this other design that's just come out, and we're just promoting this culture of having so many different pairs of the same things, and it's not how we truly address
waste. I think this is a conversation we should pick up again in another podcast, because this idea of, you know, just growth is, you know, as Jake said, it's not right for a business to a degree, or not seen as normal, to say, I don't want you to buy my boots right now. I want you to buy my boots, like you said, when you actually need a pair of boots. But how do we manage that growth? How do we stop that constant need to just expand with companies measured solely on, well, not solely, but primarily on financial revenue? Because that in itself is completely detrimental. So you're absolutely right. And I reckon that is one we definitely need to explore in a future podcast.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's a really good point as well around broader social value that enterprises and big businesses can put back into the community. So to that regard, for example, when it comes to football boots, and again, at grassroots level, my club runs a boot exchange. So every like 3 to 6 months, we'll put a message out on the group WhatsApp. And it's obviously a bit easier with children because they're outgrowing their boots every like six months-ish, as you'll know. We just have one training session. Everyone comes down, drop some boots off, and hopefully you can take away a pair, you know, the size up that you need for your children as well. So again, like anything I think we can do to promote reuse can only be seen as a good thing. And like, I'd love, for example, for Jake to take that on board for Sakito as well. He's doing some great stuff around recycling, but could he be doing some stuff around like reuse as well, particularly at a grassroots level? There's always more that we could be doing, and it's not just around revenue and recycling and reducing waste. I think there's a social value element to, you know, around reuse of boots and providing boots to those that quite frankly can't afford new boots as well.
Yeah, completely. And I like that you bring that up, and it kind of teases up for the last kind of call to action before we bring Heather in. So you're right with your example of your grassroots team, there's loads and loads of examples like that already happening within communities. I think one of the things is that we assume that people don't care as much as we do, but actually there's loads of examples where small clubs, grassroots players, communities have set up schemes exactly like that not only save money, but also really, you know, make things more sustainable. So to the call to action before we bring Heather in. Obviously, as we touched upon last time, we are currently running a campaign. So we won as part of UEFA's Champions Innovate programme. We were selected by MasterCard to run a campaign around the Champions League. And as a result of this, we are offering a lucky fan and their guest, and there will be more, the chance to win Champions League final tickets at Wembley on the 1st of June. And all they have to do, it's very, very simple, is go to pledgeleague.org. That's pledgeleague.org. Make a pledge and they enter that draw. Now, the first draw actually finishes very, very soon. And then there will be another draw for some more sets of tickets. But as part of that campaign, also what we want to do is showcase what is already happening, both at a grassroots level and at a professional level within the football community, because there is a lot of stuff happening. So we're asking people to send in their videos showcasing what they're doing within their local communities, whether that is the grassroots recycling scheme, as you've said, or reuse scheme, whether that is planting wildflower meadows, or just simply to send in a photo that introduce themselves and says that they also want to be part of this drive to protect where we play. So for information on that, please do follow us at @pledge_ball. That's @pledge_ball, and have a look out, A, for details of the competition, and B, to send in your videos to really make people feel that this is a movement that is growing hugely. So on that point, let's throw over to Heather, who will talk about two leagues now, not just the Pledge Ball League, which is really hotting up as we approach the end of the season with a huge amount of movement from the Championship clubs at the moment, which is incredible. QPR have got their sights on the top spot this weekend, I would say, but also on that Pledge League. So over to you, Heather.
Okay, so thanks, Katie. We have a double update once again this episode. So firstly, the Pledge Ball League. So we haven't seen that much movement in the top position since the last episode, with Northampton Town holding that top spot, followed by Forest Green Rovers and Manchester United. Norwich City complete that top four. We have seen some movement slightly further down the table. QPR have leapfrogged both Bristol City and Dundee United into fifth place after their fixture last week. Arsenal have also jumped 9 places, now sitting in 12th place, just above Liverpool. For everyone else, it's time to get pledging if you want to see your club at the top. And to give the usual reminder of the fabulous prizes up for grabs, we have a season's worth of free away train travel, courtesy of our partner Trainsplit, free sustainable consulting for the winning men's and women's club, courtesy of our main partner RSK, and all the partner clubs are offering club prizes such as signed shirts. Definitely worth getting involved in pledging climate action in support of your club. Okay, on to the Champions Innovate Pledge League. That's also live now, and we're delighted to announce that MasterCard have provided tickets to the Champions League final as part of the prize draw. If you'd love to be there at the final, it's definitely worth picking a team to support and pledge in order to be in with a chance of winning. As it stands, Arsenal are out in front with a strong lead. Real Madrid are second, Bayern Munich are in third, and Man City in fourth. So Dortmund, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid fans and supporters, you all need to get involved if they want to see those teams climb the Pledge Ball League.
Amazing. Thank you, Heather. As you can see, it is really hotting up both in the Pledge League itself and in the Pledge Ball League. It'll be really interesting to see who comes top of those leagues as we approach the end of the season and, in fact, are in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. So again, just a reminder, please do follow us at @pledge_ball for all details of how to enter the competition and how to submit your videos, and go to pledgely.org to enter the draw to win Champions League final tickets. Thank you to MasterCard.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.